This is Bloomberg Daybreak for this Thursday, June 21st, 2018, coming up this hour.
Oil falls as OPEC producers meet in Austria. We're live with the latest from Vienna.
Equities in Asia continue their slide amid escalating trade tensions.
Daimler becomes the first prominent company to predict a profit hit from tariffs.
The Bank of New England issues its latest policy decision.
President Trump signed an executive order to end family separations at the southern border. Plus, Trump is planning to meet Russian President Putin next month. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. A thrilling come-from-behind victory for the Yankees over the Mariners at the stadium. The Mets lost at Colorado. Tonight is the NBA draft. The Knicks have the ninth pick.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Bob Moon. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Granite Shares, a provider of cost-effective, no K-1 commodity ETFs. Visit graniteshares.com for more information. Distributor, Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
The dollar is stronger this morning while U.S. futures and European stocks struggle for a direction. It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 3 points this morning. Dow futures down 52. NASDAQ futures are up 2. The DAX in Germany is down 0.4%. CAC in Paris down 0.1%. FTSE 100 is up 0.25%. Nikkei 225 in Japan gained 0.6%, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong was down 0.33%. 10-year Treasury up 6/32, yield 2.91%. Yield on the 2-year 2.54%. NYMEX crude oil down 1.5%, or $1 to $64.70 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.8%, down $9.70 at $1,264.80 an ounce. The euro, $1.1519, and the yen, 110.45. Bob.
Oil remains in focus as OPEC and its allies continue meetings in Vienna today. Bloomberg's Anne-Marie Hordern is there and joins us live. Good morning, Anne-Marie.
Good morning, Bob and Karen. Yes, in Vienna, optimism seems to be the key word. That's all what the ministers continue to say to us reporters that are chasing them down corridors in the Hofburg Palace. They are hopeful that they can strike an agreement to narrow the gap right now that remains between Russia, who proposed 1.5 million barrels a day, and Iran, which first said a very hard line that they would not be in agreement. Khaled Al-Fali this morning, the Saudi oil minister, said 1 million barrels of supply is needed. He said to reporters, one thing you could be assured of is we will be responsive. We'll release supplies to make sure there's no shortage. Again, he's striking a tone that's very helpful to consumers. This is what he actually also said to me in St. Petersburg. They want to keep the angst of consumers to a minimum. The big question is, can they get the big three dissenters on board? Iran, Venezuela, and Iraq. In Vienna, Anne-Marie Hordern, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. And checking oil prices right now in New York, WTI is down more than 1.5% to $64.68 a barrel. In London, Brent is down almost 2% at $73.34.
We have new developments on trade this morning. India has joined the European Union in slapping retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods. And China says it will use a combination of quantitative and qualitative measures to hit back on U.S. levies. Stocks in China, meanwhile, closed down for the 8th time in the last 10 sessions. Bloomberg's Mark Cranfield has more from Singapore.
Traders in Hong Kong in particular seem to have made up their mind that China is in this for the long haul. They're not going to back down on tariffs in the short term. What they'd rather do is loosen monetary policy in China to help Chinese companies specifically. So in that case, they're going to allow the currency to get a bit weaker. And we've seen some significant dollar yuan buying today. It's gone through the 650 mark against the offshore currency, which was quite a threshold for some people. And that move has dragged a lot of Asian currencies with it. And so as the momentum builds here, it looks as though people are just getting very defensive across the board, and it's mostly driven out of China.
Bloomberg Markets strategist Mark Cranfield reporting. In China and Hong Kong today, benchmark equity indexes both fell more than 1%.
Daimler has become the first prominent company to predict a hit to profits from escalating trade tensions. The German luxury carmaker says full-year earnings will be slightly lower than last year. Bloomberg's Benedict Kemmel has details from Berlin.
Daimler came out and said, we think that fewer people in China will buy SUVs that are made in the US. And if you think about how these car companies like Daimler, like BMW are set up, they have this global export view. They make cars somewhere, export them somewhere entirely different. And the whole principle is built on open borders, on free trade, essentially. And that is now in jeopardy.
Shares of Daimler are down 4% this morning. BMW, Volkswagen, and Porsche are also trading lower.
Emerging market stocks are about to get a $600 billion boost, with MSCI saying it'll add both Saudi Arabia and Argentina to its equity index of developing nations. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett has that story.
It rewards both countries for their efforts to modernize stock markets in a step that could draw billions of dollars of fresh investment to the Middle East's biggest bourse and a Latin American nation pummeled by a currency sell-off. The decision by MSCI, which has more than $1.9 trillion in assets benchmarked to its group of emerging markets indexes, will add the two countries to its developing nation index in about a year. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Charlie. The Bank of England is forecast to keep rates unchanged at today's latest policy decision. Markets will look to minutes from the June meeting to see if the central bank could hike rates in August. Any language on trade tensions could also garner attention. Daniela Russell is head of UK rate strategy at HSBC.
One of the things which I'd expect the Bank of England to start to acknowledge today is that softening in the global environment, and also the softening that we've seen in the European data of late.
That decision from the Bank of England comes at 7 a.m. Wall Street time.
Here in the U.S., the Federal Reserve releases results on this year's first round of stress tests for major banks today, and we get a preview from Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
Banks have been rebuilding capital buffers. The Fed issues the stress test results in two stages. Today's is the first, the quantitative analysis. Next week, the Fed will disclose who passed and who failed. In 2017, all major institutions received passing grades for the first time since the examinations were introduced almost a decade ago. Before the 2008 crisis, equity accounted for 3% of the biggest banks' total liabilities. Now, it's about 7%. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Vinny. This update brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
Thank you, Karen. That brings us to 5:07 on Wall Street. The president backs down. The latest on immigration from Bloomberg's Michael Barr. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. President Donald Trump reversed course on his policy separating immigrant children from parents who crossed the U.S. border illegally. Trump signed an executive order yesterday that he said would end the practice. Later, at a rally last night in Minnesota, Trump said the whole immigration issue is being pushed by Democrats who do not want to accept the Russia investigation as a phony witch hunt.
If you want to create a humane, lawful system of immigration, then you need to retire the Democrats and elect Republicans to finally secure our borders.
Trump's executive order included no timeline for the Department of Homeland Security to begin detaining families together, and it also does not say when or how children already taken from their parents would be reunited with them. President Trump is planning to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin during Trump's visit to Europe next month. That's according to two people familiar with the matter. Two possibilities for the meeting are either before the NATO summit in Brussels on July 11th or after Trump's visit to Britain on July 13th. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo may visit North Korea this weekend or next week. That's according to Yonhap. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says marijuana will be legal nationwide starting October 17th.
We will soon have a new system in place, one that keeps cannabis out of the hands of our kids and keeps profits away from organized crime.
Canada becomes the second country to legalize recreational pot behind Uruguay. German Chancellor Angela Merkel will meet with a group of European leaders in Brussels on Sunday to try to find a way forward on migration policy. Bloomberg's Patrick Donahue has more from Berlin.
The mini-summit is in response to increasing political pressure on Merkel and others to act. The German leader is especially facing opposition at home from her Bavarian allies to forge bilateral agreements on returning asylum seekers registered elsewhere. The split has caused a government crisis in Berlin. The Sunday meeting is less than a week before a crucial EU summit in the Belgian capital at the end of June. In Berlin, Patrick Donahue, Bloomberg Radio.
Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Thank you, Michael. It is now 5:09 on Wall Street, and that is time for your Bloomberg NBC Sports Updates. Good morning, John Stashower.
Good morning, Bob. What a win for the Yankees against the Seattle Mariners, who came to the Bronx having won 13 of their last 16 games, and the Mariners led 5-0 in the fifth inning. They seemed on their way to victory. Back came the Yanks. Two runs in the fifth inning, another in the seventh. A game-tying two-run homer in the eighth inning by Gary Sanchez, and then with two outs in the ninth.
Swung on and driven to deep left center. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. It's a game-winning bottom of the ninth. Two out, walk-off home run by Giancarlo Stanton. Giancarlo, non si può stoparlo.
John Sterling, WFAN. Home run traveled 453 feet, the first walk-off for Stanton as a member of the Yanks. They won 7-5. They moved two games ahead of the Red Sox, who again lost in Minnesota. The Mets again lost at Colorado. Same score as the night before, 10-8. Mets led 3-0, later 8-6. Robert Gazelman took the loss in relief. The NHL's MVP plays for the Devils. Taylor Hall won the Hart Trophy. The Calder for top rookie went to the Islanders' Matthew Barzell. Could be a lot of wheeling and dealing in and around tonight's NBA draft in Brooklyn. That's where Dwight Howard is coming to play, acquired yesterday by the Nets for Timofey Mozgov. The Knicks have the ninth pick of the draft. The Nets the 29th. Phoenix picks first, expected to take DeAndre Ayton, the center, who played his 1 year of college basketball at Arizona. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Bob.
Thank you, John. The world's 10 highest-paid athletes collectively made over $1 billion in the past year, but their tax bills differed depending on where they call home. The top spot went to boxer Floyd Mayweather, who earned $285 million. He netted $179 million after taxes, 63% of his original salary, because Nevada doesn't impose an individual income tax. LeBron James pulled in $85 million and gets 58% of that, or $49 million, because he pays state income taxes in Ohio. The highest-paid soccer player is Lionel Messi at $111 million. He nets $72 million because of a 35% tax rate in Argentina. Bloomberg Daybreak, brought to you by National Realty, developers of Prime, New York, Hoboken, Philadelphia, and Delray Beach Real Estate. Up to 20% return properties. See them at nria.net.
Global News, 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. The dollar is strengthening, once again hitting the highest in almost a year as investors continue to fret about the outlook for global trade. European equities drifting alongside U.S. stock index futures, which have turned decidedly lower. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures now down 10 points. Dow futures down 107. NASDAQ futures down 17. The DAX in Germany is now down 0.6%. 10-year Treasury up 8/32nd, yield 2.90%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.54%. NYMEX crude oil down 1.9%, or $1.25 to $64.46 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.8%, down $9.50 to $12.65 an ounce. The euro is at $1.1522, the yen 110.36. Watching shares of Micron Technology up 3.8% in early trading, the largest U.S. maker of memory chips, giving a strong forecast. We're also watching for the weekly report on initial jobless claims this morning at 8:30 Wall Street time. The Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index is at 9:45, and leading economic indicators are at 10. And we do get earnings today from Kroger, Darden Restaurants, and Red Hat, among others. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Karen. Experts say the true impact of President Trump's executive order will largely depend on how Congress and the courts respond to it. Trump reversed course, signing an executive order yesterday to prevent families who are caught trying to cross into the U.S. illegally from being separated. Meanwhile, 10 U.S. mayors will be visiting the U.S.-Mexico border today to protest the zero-tolerance policy. President Trump is planning to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin during Trump's visit to Europe next month, according to two people familiar with the matter. In baseball, the Yankees beat Seattle in the come-from-behind victory. The Mets lost along with the Red Sox. The Orioles beat the Nationals. The A's and Giants were winners. In the World Cup, Portugal, Uruguay, and Spain were winners yesterday. Global News 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Michael, thank you. It is now 5:19 on Wall Street. The pound dropping to a fresh 7-month low this morning ahead of the Bank of England's monetary policy announcement later today. For some analysis, let's turn to Jeremy Stretch, head of G10 FX strategy for CIBC, Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce. He joins us on the line in London now. Good morning. This is the fourth day sterling has weakened against the dollar. It's down 1% this week. Does this slump continue if Governor Carney and company stand pat?
I think it does, although having said that, it's not really about today's meeting. It's really what they set up for the August meeting that really counts for the valuation of sterling. But markets, I think, have still been overplaying the possibility or probability of an August rate hike. I think the bank will certainly dampen down such expectations through the course of the language today. And I think, accordingly, that does keep sterling very much on the defensive. Sterling, of course, doesn't perform well in a risk-off environment, and we've got a huge trading lower. So there's a strong basis of reason to suggest that sterling long positions are going to be further cut back.
So is this just the BOE? Is it the stronger dollar? Or how much do the shaky Brexit politics figure into this?
Well, in a sense, all three of those are the three competing legs to argue why sterling should continue to trade lower. The economic fundamentals are generally relatively subdued, apart from a little bit of resilience on the retail spending side over the last couple of months, which you can partly explain due to seasonal factors. We do obviously have the ongoing Brexit story, which continues to be one hesitates to say a slow-motion car crash, but certainly the negotiations have not gone particularly smoothly and don't show any signs of doing so in the near term. And then when you overlay that with the dollar, which is remaining very upbeat pretty much across the board, then it does underline the fact that the recent extension of sterling long positions does look rather counterintuitive and ripe for a correction.
How much is the BOE paying attention to sterling as they consider their rate rise?
Well, of course, sterling and the valuation of the currency does have an impact via the influence that it has in terms of inflationary pressure. So, of course, we had that substantial re-rating, i.e. depreciation of sterling after the Brexit vote almost 2 years ago now. And that did encourage inflation to move up very smartly and obviously caused some concern from the Bank of England. If we are going to see sterling continuing to cheapen up, then, of course, that will provide an inflationary impetus via import prices, particularly in terms of the commodity side, and so the bank will be very mindful of the degree of pass-through down the price chain, so we'll be monitoring very closely how any increases in imported commodity prices are pushed down through to the consumer level. Now, of course, retailers are finding it difficult to raise prices, so in a sense there may be a degree of margin squeeze, but nevertheless the bank will be looking at the impact of sterling on its inflation profile very closely.
Global markets seem to be riding a seesaw over these tariff tensions right now, but it seems that the market has been telling itself, well, not yet. It hasn't hurt quite yet. Today we have Daimler becoming the first prominent company to predict a hit to profits from escalating trade tensions. Is that a sign of what's to come?
Certainly, potentially, yes. I think it was also notable that a day or two ago, the IFO Institute in Germany substantially revised down the German growth estimates, or their German growth estimates, largely on the basis of trade restrictions as well. So in a sense, you know, trade frictions are really starting to have an impact in terms of estimations of activity levels and ultimately profitability. And so in a sense, you know, whilst we've been sort of consoling ourselves to say that the global economy is still continuing to grow and the numbers, at least in the first blush, were relatively modest, I think markets are now starting to take a rather less sanguine view of some of the risks and starting to demonstrate that in terms of hard estimates, in terms of corporate profitability or growth estimates, and that clearly will have an impact on investor sentiment.
About a half minute left here. If we're saying damage has already been done, what happens if this continues?
Well, in a sense, of course, we started the year with global growth expectations looking relatively well entrenched with a cyclical recovery across the globe. And now as these trade tensions continue to grow, then we may well see a further deterioration in trade expectations. And accordingly, if that is the case, then investors will continue to retreat back to safer havens, but also potentially looking for those currencies which aren't reliant on foreign inflow. So I think that's something that investors are going to be very mindful of as we go forward. So the liquidity of the US dollar, which generally suggests the dollar performs well in periods of uncertainty, may be tested if the market takes the view that the US is reliant on funding and it is also the facilitator of the trade concerns.
Jeremy Stretch, head of G10 FX Strategy for Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce in London, thanks very much for joining us this morning. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by BNB Bank from Montauk to Manhattan, partnering with business in their financial success. With local decision-making, custom solutions, and attention to detail, BNB Bank. Many success stories, one bank, bnbbank.com.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Bob Moon. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Shares of Daimler are down more than 4%. The German luxury car maker became the first prominent company to cut its profit outlook due to escalating trade tensions. It predicts Chinese customers will now buy fewer cars after Beijing slapped tariffs on U.S. auto imports.
India has joined the European Union in slapping retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods, and China says it'll use a combination of quantitative and qualitative measures to hit back on U.S. levies.
A trio of central bank decisions this morning. The Swiss National Bank kept borrowing costs ultra low, saying the franc remained highly valued, and that another bout of financial market stress could lead to an appreciation again.
Norway's central bank unexpectedly revealed a restrained stance by revising down its short-term interest rate forecast. It also indicated it's prepared to start tightening in September.
And the Bank of England is forecast to keep interest rates on hold at their meeting today. Bloomberg's Jill Ward reports from London.
Any indication in the minutes of the meeting as to how policymakers are interpreting a mixed batch of recent economic data, as well as their thinking on a potential rate hike in August, will be closely watched. Markets are pricing in about a 45% chance of a rate hike in August, and investors still see an 80% chance of a quarter point increase by the end of the year. In London, Jill Ward, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Jill, thank you. The chances of OPEC agreeing on oil production increases at tomorrow's meeting in Vienna have improved. Iran edged away from a threat to veto any deal that would boost output. Saudi Arabia wants to add about 600,000 barrels a day to the global market. Checking oil right now, NYMEX crude oil down 1.9%. It's at $64.48 a barrel, while Brent is down 2.2% at $73.11.
Shares of Micron Technology are up about 3% in early trading. The largest U.S. maker of memory chips gave a strong forecast highlighting broad and sustained demand for its products.
And coming up this afternoon, the Federal Reserve releases results on this year's first round of stress tests for major banks. Futures this morning are falling. S&P futures down 8 points. Dow futures down 97. NASDAQ futures down 18. The DAX in Germany's down 0.9%. 10-year Treasury up 8/32nds, yield 2.91%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.54%. COMEX gold is down 0.7%, down $9.30 to $12.65.30. $1.30 an ounce. The euro, $1.1520, and the yen, 110.42. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. Now 5:33 on Wall Street. In the end, children caused the president to back down, but not end his tough talk on immigration. The latest from Bloomberg's Michael Barr. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Hours after signing an executive order that prevents children from being taken from their parents, President Trump held a rally on the road. Trump told a crowd in Duluth, Minnesota last night, the whole immigration issue is being pushed by the Democrats, who don't want to accept that the Russia investigation is, as he calls it, a phony witch hunt.
They want to stay on immigration because they don't want to go into the halls of Congress, which has totally revealed the Russian scam that's going on.
With President Trump signing the executive order aimed at ending family separation at the border, what comes next? Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
Legislation. The Congress has been wrestling with this and having a very rough time because Republicans are deeply divided on the issue and Democrats don't want to fund a wall. So Bloomberg's Sahil Kapoor says it has to be narrow.
The only way Congress does something about this is if it puts a narrowly tailored solution to simply deal with family separations and forgets about, you know, it doesn't do the wall, doesn't do legal immigration cuts, doesn't do all this extra money for border security and the diversity lottery and family.
Congressional leaders have said they hope to have something by the end of the week. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Federal investigators have subpoenaed the publisher of the National Enquirer to turn over financial records as part of their investigation into President Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen. The Wall Street Journal reports the order is related to a $150,000 payment America Media Incorporated made during the 2016 election to a former Playboy model who claimed she had an affair with Trump. President Trump is planning to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin during Trump's visit to Europe next month. That's according to two people familiar with the matter. Trump had two meetings with Putin last summer at the G20 summit in Hamburg, Germany. Canadian lawmakers approved legislation to fully legalize pot. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau spoke before Parliament.
The new recreational cannabis regime will officially come into force on October 17th of this year.
Canada becomes only the second country in the world to make marijuana legal for recreational purposes behind Uruguay. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Thank you, Michael. Now 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. And good morning to you, John Stashower.
Good morning, Bob. The Yankees' 49th victory of the season, 16th in the last 20 games, was special. Against the Mariners, who came to the Bronx 20 games over 500 midway through Seattle, led 5-0. Yanks came back. Two-run homers in the 8th and 9th inning. First, Gary Sanchez to tie the game, and then Giancarlo Stanton, a 453-foot blast with two outs in the 9th to win 7-5. Aaron Boone asked just how big a victory this was.
This was a good one. This is a good one where, you know, again, it looks like it's going to be a ho-hum, go down to defeat. You know, you're just trying to piece it together from a bullpen standpoint, and the guys just kind of hang around. And so maybe when we look back on the year, you know, this will be a pointing, something they point to, certainly for Giancarlo, a guy of his stature. But I don't get that much into that. I'll let you guys define that.
Yanks go for the sweep this afternoon. Should be a great pitching matchup. Yankee ace Luis Severino against the Mariners' James Paxton, who's 6-1. He had a no-hitter last month. Mets had a lead at Colorado. Bullpen couldn't hold it. A second straight Rockies win by the same 10-8 score. Mets have scored 28 runs in three games in Denver, have only won once. Day game today. NHL awards night in Vegas. Very emotional. The 10 survivors from the junior hockey team bus accident in April that killed 16 people in Canada were there in their jerseys, two of them in wheelchairs. The Hart Trophy for the league MVP went to the Devils' Taylor Hall. The Islanders' Matthew Barzal took the Calder for top rookie. The Nets have acquired Dwight Howard from Charlotte. Brooklyn will be in 16 the last 8 years. Barclays Center hosting the NBA draft tonight. Phoenix has the first pick. The Knicks have the 9th. With a Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Bob.
Thank you, John. Now 5:37 on Wall Street, and the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with the cover on investing in North Korea. Also in this week's issue, banks are turning on the charm for ultra-wealthy clients. Simone Foxman wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
These are the top 55, 60 family-backed investment firms in the country that are doing things like buying and selling businesses and doing a lot of these transactions, enough so that it makes sense for the banks to have a whole unit dedicated to covering these folks.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now to access insights and analysis on the global stories that matter most. And it is now 5:38 on Wall Street. That is time for your Tri-State Business Report. And we check in with Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning.
Morning, Bob. Governor Phil Murphy says it's too early to identify potential cuts to his budget should the New Jersey legislature fail to approve tax increases. Murphy needs lawmakers' approval for a higher sales tax, as well as new levies on millionaires, Uber, Airbnb, and e-cigarettes. He's also counting on legalizing and taxing recreational marijuana. StubHub and other online ticket resale sites would have to ensure their users know they're buying resold tickets. Under a plan passed by the New York legislature, it now heads to Governor Cuomo's desk for his signature. Plans for Milford, Connecticut's first waterfront beer garden and third craft brewery have moved through the Planning and Zoning Board. The News-Times says Dockside Waterfront Beer Garden has been heralded by the city's Economic Development Commission as a destination business that could benefit the city. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Bob?
Ed, thanks very much. Now 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that investors have pulled record amounts of cash from a fund with a heavy position in Boeing.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha. Mark Zuckerberg is within a whisker of leapfrogging Warren Buffett as the world's third richest person.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're following the Bank of England. Investors look for clues on the timing of its next rate hike.
I'm Steve Potosk, and on KYW in Philadelphia, I'm reporting on the latest manufacturing survey from the Philly Fed.
I'm Ed Corey on KFBK in Sacramento. I'm reporting Instagram has reached 1 billion monthly active users.
Thank you all. Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Guggenheim Partners is exploring the sale of a stake in its $250 billion asset management unit. According to people familiar with the matter, Guggenheim Partners Investment Management has been in talks with global insurers, sovereign wealth funds, and investment pools in Europe, the Middle East, and Asia, according to those people. The Wall Street Journal reported that the deal could involve Guggenheim taking on German insurer Munich Re's asset management unit. S&P futures down 5 points. This is Bloomberg. Daybreak brought to you by Willoughby's since 1898, New York City's boutique camera store, four precision-crafted Hasselblad and Leica cameras, plus a full selection of GoPro action-adventure cameras. Willoughby's, corner of 5th Avenue and 35th Street.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. The dollar is strengthening this morning, once again reaching the highest in almost a year as investors continue to fret about the outlook for global trade. Right now, the euro is at $1.1524. It's down about 0.4% against the dollar. The yen is at 110.44. Futures are lower. S&P futures down 6 points. Dow futures down 80. NASDAQ futures down 11. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. DAX in Germany is down 0.8%. 10-year Treasury up 7/32, yield 2.91%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.54%. NYMEX crude oil down 1.5% or 96 cents at $64.75 a barrel. And COMEX gold is down 0.7% on $8.90 to $12.65.60 an ounce. Kroger, one of three companies in the S&P 500, scheduled to report earnings today. And we get a preview from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Bloomberg Intelligence says Kroger has been adapting, making changes for the short term and laying the foundation for future business growth. The grocer exited less profitable markets, acquired Home Chef, and entered into some strategic partnerships. Kroger is seen posting an adjusted profit of 63 cents a share on revenue of $37.25 billion. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thanks, Jeff. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Donald Trump told a rally in Duluth, Minnesota last night that we're going to keep families together and the border is going to be just as tough as it's been. The statement came just hours after Trump did an about-face and signed an executive order to stop immigrant families crossing illegally into the U.S. from being separated. Trump also told the crowd Democrats put illegal immigrants before they put American citizens. In baseball, the Yankees beat Seattle in a come-from-behind victory. The Mets lost along with the Red Sox. The Orioles beat the Nationals. The A's and Giants were winners. In the World Cup, Portugal, Uruguay, and Spain were winners yesterday. Global News, 24 hours a day. On air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Mr. Barr, thank you very much. It is now 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. We're joined live now by Jennifer Ryan, Bloomberg Opinion Editor in our London Bureau. Jen, good morning. So Chris Bryant posits that Mercedes has found a perfect boogeyman in Donald Trump. We're talking Daimler, which makes Mercedes and is blaming the tariff tit for tat for an expected profit hit. How should we read this?
Well, it's absolutely right that Mercedes would be affected by the higher tariffs. It exports about 60,000 SUVs every year to China from its plant in Alabama. So if you assume that Daimler can't pass on any 25% tariff hike to customers, by Chris Bryant's calculations, the company would take a hit to profit of about $500 million. But to be sure, the real impact probably wouldn't be anywhere near that high, since Daimler can either raise prices for Chinese customers or try to sell some of the vehicles elsewhere.
But Chris sees something odd about this profit warning.
Yeah, the timing's strange, and it's by no means certain that China's ultimately going to penalize American exports. I mean, we're all well aware that U.S.-China trade relations are on a yo-yo or yo-yoing on a daily basis. It's also worth pointing out that Daimler didn't upgrade its profit target when China said last month that it would cut import tariffs. Mercedes still exports plenty of limousines to China. So this whole affair has a little bit of a sense of Daimler being a little bit flexible with its facts.
I remember all the way back to the carb craze when just about every company you can imagine was blaming that for a hit on profits. So what's really going on here?
It looks like this point about the tariffs is really making Trump out to be a bit of a scapegoat, because Daimler's press release lists several of other reasons for the anticipated profit shortfall. One of these is recall costs for diesel vehicles. But taking it all together, the profit warning won't help shareholders get more comfortable that it can cope with all the challenges the industry faces.
Tyler Cowen has a piece noting that bilateral deals seem to work for leaders not named Trump.
So Donald Trump has made a wide range of complaints about the state of global trade, but Cohen says that there's one point that he's got right, and that's the rejection of multilateralism. Cohen says that a bilateral approach to trade might yield higher returns. He says that he's struck by how many pro-trade economists are sort of less than enthusiastic about recently negotiated free trade deals, such as the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It seems we're in a situation where we're adding to the bureaucracy of trade as much as we are liberating it.
Okay, once again, how do we read this when it comes to the U.S. relationship with China?
So think about the setting we're in today. The world's number two economy, China, is strongly opposed to free trade ideals and free flows of information. So the smartest case you can make for bilateralism is that trade in many goods is already fairly free, but there's some pretty strong examples of tariffs and trade barriers that remain. So if you were to engage in strategic bargaining backed by concrete threats, backed by a very powerful nation such as the U.S., that could demand removal of these restrictions.
So does this present us with a path forward today?
Well, yes and no, because the path forward could involve the U.S. brutally pushing China through cajoling and intimidation into greater liberty for trade and foreign investment. But Cowen says that it's hard to see this working because China's a tough country to push around and the U.S. really isn't in a good position to coordinate a response with allies. Embracing Trump is simply too politically toxic for them, or perhaps too much hard work. So where we might end up is with a trade war or, at best, a pointless war of rhetoric which peters out into mutual embarrassment.
Okay. Our thanks to Jennifer Ryan, Bloomberg Opinion Editor in our London Bureau. And you can read more on this and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion and on the Bloomberg Terminal by typing OPIN. Go. Karen.
All right, thanks, Bob. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. It's brought to you by American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute. Resolve faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
Treasury Secretary Mnuchin says the department will unveil a new Form 1040 individual income tax return next week that will come in the shape of a postcard, as promised. The FCC plans to vote next month to consider expanding the use of a portion of the airwaves that mobile carriers are eyeing for 5G wireless networks. And a bill that would prohibit the IRS from reemploying staff fired for misconduct is scheduled for consideration today by the House Ways and Means Committee.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now, another legal news. Let's look at congressional testimony by FBI Director Christopher Wray and Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horodewitz. The men answered 2 days of questions about the FBI's conduct surrounding the 2016 presidential election. For more on this story, Bloomberg's Jim Grasso speaks with Notre Dame Law School professor Jimmy Garule.
Jimmy, how did Wray do in defending the FBI against the findings of the Inspector General's report?
I think he was, it was very straightforward. He was unequivocal in his support of Bob Mueller. And I think in large part because he knows Mueller. He's worked with him in the past. I think, he is well aware of his integrity and his honesty, and he believes that, that he's conducting this investigation in a proper manner.
There's been an extraordinary amount of attention paid to about a dozen anti-Trump text messages exchanged between an FBI agent and an FBI lawyer who were having an affair, perhaps because the texts are so concrete in a mass of ambiguity. Has there been too much attention paid to this, or are these really troubling?
Well, they certainly create an appearance of impropriety. They create an appearance here of unfairness because of the anti-Trump sentiments that are included in these text messages. But at the same time, the DOJ, Department of Justice Inspector General Michael Horowitz, concluded that there was no evidence, absolutely none, that this bias affected the decision-making in either the Hillary Clinton email scandal investigation or the investigation into possible collusion between the Russians and the Trump campaign.
The Inspector General also testified on Tuesday at a joint hearing of the House Judiciary and Oversight Committees, where the rhetoric seemed to be ramping up a bit. Do you think that he answered questions, particularly those raised by Republican Trey Gowdy, who said that that anti-Trump bias in the FBI couldn't be put aside?
Well, it's interesting with the House Republicans. On the one hand, they praise the Inspector General in his report and findings regarding the anti-Trump bias. On the other hand, they criticize and attack the same Inspector General in the same report with respect to his findings that there's no evidence that this bias had any effect in either the Clinton investigation or the Trump campaign investigation. So it seems to me that the House Republicans can't have it both ways.
That's Notre Dame Law School professor Jimmy Garule speaking with the Bloomberg's Jim Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. S&P futures are down 7 points this morning. Dow futures down 86. NASDAQ futures down 12. The DAX in Germany's down 1%. 10-year Treasury up 7/32, yield 2.91%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.54%. NYMEX crude oil down 1.6% or $1.07 to $64.64 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.8% on $9.70 to $12.64.80 an ounce. The euro at $1.1520. The yen 110. 0.43, and Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg Radio.